So, I don't know if you've seen it, but have you looked up what this cocoa cup is, Olsen?
I have no clue what that is. What is that?
I want you to do a quick Google search and search up Cocoa Cup NHL, and I feel like you'll be able to see the first article and see what it is. Let me know when you've searched that up.
While you do this, while you're mentioning it, I already see it. Winter Classic MVP is the winner of the Coco Cup.
Now, what are your first impressions of this Cocoa Cup? Because to me, I thought it was just going to be like, oh, it's like Seattle and coffee is a big thing. So I thought like, oh, it's a coffee thing. It's only going to be for, just for this one match between Seattle and Vegas.
I like it, honestly. I like the idea of it, right? The NHL markets it as like celebrating outdoor rinks and warm refreshments that fuel how we learn the game. The trophy will be presented to the MVP of the Winter Classic every year. I just read the tweet, right? Like they're trying to, the whole point of the Winter Classic games, I think, was to like bring back the nostalgia of being like, oh, remember like when you were playing when you were a kid outdoors, It's kind of like that, but just in a professional setting now with tens of thousands of people cheering you on. And that's, I guess, where they drew from the Cocoa Cup, right? So I love that idea, right? Because then, if not, was it going to be like the Orange Slices MVP? Like, no, Orange Slices Cup, nah. Like the Cocoa Cup, super. I just hate the branding on it. Branding cheaps it out, right? Like, you don't see the Stanley Cup have a bottom one that just says like FanDuel as like the bottom like ring or whatever. Right? You don't see that because they knows like kind of cheapens it. But like when your cup is just surrounded by NHL TNT logos, it cheapens it. I love the idea of it. The cup is like, you know what? I hated it the first time I looked at it. The more I look at it, the more I like it, but I don't like the branding. Does that make sense?
No, I completely agree with you. Like, why? Like, I get TNT has the broadcasting rights for the Winter Classic, but yeah, this completely looks to me as just like something that it's just being like marketed. Like, TNT is just trying to put their ads on it, basically, right? Like, it's kind of, I feel like they do a lot in basketball, right? Like, it's like the Kia MVP award, but like, I don't know if that award actually has like a big plaster of Kia on it, right? I think it's just an award, but like this one's like clearer for everyone to see that it's an like a TNT, like it says like TNT on it, right? Like, and it there's Discover on it as well, like just a whole bunch of ads on it. So I just feel like it's a cheap cup, I feel like. Like, I don't know if you win the cup if it's something that you're gonna cherish per se, but I get it from like a marketing standpoint that it is helpful to, bring back the memories of, like you said, like, or like what they said in the tweet, right? Like saying it's to bring back the, idea of that warm refreshments, playing back the outdoor rinks and stuff, right? So I kind of get it, but I don't know. I feel like the executions wasn't great.
So I'm gonna try to do something that I'm gonna end up regretting. I'm gonna try to describe to our listeners what the cup looks like. Right, Jeffrey, do you have a picture of the cup open?
I do, and I'm excited for the segment.
Okay. So it's like a pentagon. The base is a pentagon, and it's all like wood, right? It's just a pentagon wood with five sides on the first layer, kind of the Stanley Cup. And then the second layer is still a pentagon. It's a little more narrow than the Stanley Cup, but in the front there's MVP 2024 on it. And then on top of that, there's like a mug, like a white mug with a, I want to say like a stitched on koozie, like a beer koozie. And it says NHL TNT on it, on the mug, so right in the middle, right above MVP 2024. And the top, this part I really like the most. It's like if you like dropped a mug into a cup of cocoa and it's like cocoa's like splashing out, right? So it looks really cool. The word discover, I'll be honest with you, did not notice that until you mentioned it. So on the puck that's dropping into the cocoa, it says 2024 Winter Classic and then the logo of Discover credit cards, whatever it is, on it. Jeffrey, how was my description?
I think it's a pretty accurate description of what the cup is going to be. I feel like I still want to see it like size wise. Like, I don't know if it's something that you can kind of like lift up. Like, I don't know. I feel like, I don't know. It feels like one of those like really, it also looks like a participant, like something that like it's collectible. I don't think it's something that players are going to cherish in particular. I mean, given the fact that, like, not just aren't many, like, Winter Classics, right, just one a year, like, I feel like it's just going to be a collectible. Like, who knows? I feel like in 10 years we're going to see it on eBay or something. So one of the players are going to sell it or something.
Do you feel that any players give a particular focus to any of the trophies for the NHL besides the Stanley Cup, though?
I feel like there are some. Like, I feel like if you win the Ted Lindsay, I feel like that's a very big award, right? Like, that's being voted by the players, right? So, like being acknowledged by the players around the league that you are the most valuable player, I think that's important. I think the heart is probably something important to players, but I feel like of all the awards that you can win, like, this to me ranks somewhere along the lines of winning, like, the Prince of Wales trophy or the Clarence Campbell trophy, where you've won something, but it's not really a win, right? Like, it's just kind of like it's a dare thing, right? Like, I think players more are looking to win the game, obviously, more than winning this, I don't know, this MVP cup.
It's a collectible trophy.
Yeah, kind of like if you're playing, like, video games, it's kind of like those one, like, achievements that, oh, yeah, you won an MVP, here's a little bronze-rated trophy or something, right? So, like, I don't know. I feel like, I give it 5 years, and I feel like it'll be gone by then.
Do you think so? I think every year it's going to be a different trophy. Like, that's why they put MVP 2024 on it. Because I think every year they can have a new trophy.
Well, yeah, but, like, I'm saying, like, it's called the Coco Cup, right? So it's going to, I feel like it's going to be the same design. Like, I don't see there being too much variance where they can build, like, a different cup or, like, obviously, right? There's one cup that's being presented, obviously, and then there's one cup that's going to be the collectible for the player that wins it, right? So it's just going to send the Hockey Hall of Fame in, like, the back corner where no one's going to look at it, is my guess. I'm shaming it a lot, even the fact we haven't even seen it in person. We don't know what's going to look like, how the award ceremony is going to be like, but I don't have high hopes for it.
But is that not... I think, to be honest with you, I think that's what the NHL needs, though. I feel like the... How do I put it? The luster of the outdoor game has kind of died down because they have so many, right? They have the Winter Classic, they have the Heritage Classic, they have, you know, all these outdoor games. Having an MVP trophy keeps it as the most important of the outdoor games.
It does, but I don't feel like it does enough. Like, I don't think we're going to see less outdoor games to make this more important, but I mean, like, as long as you clear the schedule well, I think you can make it, like, I don't know. I feel like there just hasn't been a lot of excitement as well. Maybe it's because we're on the East Coast and maybe, you know, West Coast, you know, people are more excited out there right now because it's, you know, going to be in Seattle. But, like, I feel like for us living on the East Coast, like, yes, we know the Winter Classic is happening, but we're not, like, super attuned to it. But I'm sure, like, you know, New Year's Day, if not busy, you're probably going to watch the game. It's mid-afternoon. There's probably nothing else on. Maybe you're spending time with family, but you know, you're probably going to be watching the game because I don't think there's going to be much other hockey to watch, right? So
that's fair. I mean, like, that is in between the hangover wake up, right, from the night before and, like, the second crap ton of food coming for dinner. Like, the Winter Classic slots in right in between those two. Like, right after you've had that disgusting, greasy breakfast from your hangover. It's about time when the Winter Classic starts, right?
Well, we don't condone any type of alcohol consumption here on the Back of Books podcast. If you choose to do so, that's your own choice. But yes, I understand what you mean, though, Olsen.
Yeah, I'm not saying, like, you know, drink till you black out. But, you know, once you hit a certain age, having more than, like, one gets you a hangover, so.
Well, let's say that you stayed up until midnight so that you can, you know, do Happy New Year, right? Like, you stay up until midnight and then you're gonna sleep in later and you're gonna wake up closer to, like, 11-ish and noon, and you're probably groggy because you stayed up late that night and now you're having your brunch, right? So no need to add in the hangover part.
Old. When I have a hangover, I already know it.
I can tell you I won't be I'll be at work, so I don't get to celebrate New Year's, so just the way it is. And with that, let's start the show proper, shall we?
You're listening to the Bag of Pucks podcast, part of the National Podcast Network.
And we are back. speaking of participant medals, I feel like the classic tournament that always has participant medals is the World Juniors. And I don't know how much World Juniors you've watched, Alston. I know you're a busy man. But I felt bad watching the Canada-Latvia game. And when you have to pick a player of the game for the Latvian team who just lost like 10-0 to Canada, I feel like that's a slap in the face. I feel like at that point, you know, yes, you know, it's all about, you know, sportsmanship and respect. But at that point, I think you need to just let the kids, like, go to the lockers, you know, settle down, regroup, instead of having, you know, everyone to stand at the ice, take a picture of being a player, like, the best player in the team that just lost 10-0. What's your reaction to, or, like, what are your thoughts on, like, the player of the games for, like, when a team gets blown out like that?
I think it's still a acknowledgement that some players still played really well, right? If you look at a very, like, single-person view, you're looking at an eye, not a team view, it's like, yeah, like, I still did pretty well, right? Like, a team got blown out, but still, at the same point, it's like, you still did well. Like, it sucks, but, hey, man, these kids get, like, a watch, don't they?
I feel like it's different with every tournament, but I feel like it's like a, I don't know, I feel like it's like getting a participant medal on top of your participant ribbon. I feel like at that point, like, you've already played the game, you know, you got the experience, but now you get this extra, oh, thank you for participating in this game. Like, I get it when it's a closer game. I mean, I don't think there's any way to get around it, but I feel like if you're doing something like this, I feel like you want to try to speed it up as possible, because it gets embarrassing to the point, like, that you're doing this entire medal presentation after a game when most players are just, like, looking to, like, hey, we probably got to play the next day, we need to regroup, refocus. Last thing I want to do is, you know, having to be selected as the best of the worst, basically, right? So,
but at the same time, though, like, what are you... You're doing this because, like, the sponsors have made you do it, right? The sponsors don't have, like, a blown-out clause where you're just like, oh, man, they lost by 7. We don't do it anymore. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but I think maybe it's just, like, how they do it on the world stage. And I think especially given the fact that these are, you know, teenagers, this is younger players, I think they still need to have that focus of that, you know, this is for fun, right? Like, this isn't, like, don't make it all about competition, you know? Like, introduce that sportsmanship aspect back into it. So I understand it just sucks when, you know, you get blown out and having to be that one guy that skates up and has to take, you know, smile, take a picture. Like, I feel that's hard.
But do they smile? They just skate their sleeve.
Well, yeah, I mean, but, like, you have to make that effort to be like, shake the hands with whoever is the sponsor or whatever, whichever, like, not celebrity, but whichever, like, CEO or high-ranking person in one certain company or certain person in the tournament, you have to shake their hand, say, like, oh, thank you, take a picture, and then you also have to take a picture of the other team, and then that's before, like, even, like, you know, shaking hands, that's before doing the national anthems. Like, it's a lot, I feel like.
Is it worse to do that as the game is close, or if it's, you know, a blowout, though? Does it hurt a lot more if it's a blow? Because let's be honest here, 3-2 versus, like, 7-2, I feel like maybe I'd rather do that, because you're, like, so close. You're just like, man, if only I did one thing right, it might have been 2-2. If only I did one thing right, it might have been 2-2. Maybe there's a chance for us to win 3-2. When you're, like, 7-2, you're looking, you're thinking in your head, you're just like, well, can't be just one person that messed up.
I just think I think it just shouldn't be an on-ice presentation. I think, like, if you did it as, like, an off-ice, like, you know how, they do 3 stars of the games or something, right? Maybe you take a photo with the background with all the sponsors or something, and you take a picture with the best player of the game per team with that backdrop with someone from the tournament or a sponsor. I think, like, that would make more sense than having to do it on ice, because I feel like most players, even especially, like, if you lost, like, really hard, like, you played a tough game, the last thing you want to do is, you know, you want to hit the showers, right? Like, if you lose, like, if you remember, like, the Elias Anderson incident where he throws the silver medal into the stands, right? Like, and when you, like you said, losing a close game, too, it's going to be hard, so... I just think maybe you should switch it to like an off ice component, because you know it doesn't seem right to do it on ice anymore.
Okay, but money. The whole point of doing it on ice and everything is that it's on TV, right?
Yeah, I guess there's that point, but I don't know. But to me, it just feels like it also make a lot more sense to do it off ice, because like, you've probably got a game that's coming like in about 1 hour right after. You need to clear the arena. You need to redo the ice and get ready for the next teams that are coming to play like right after. Like, I don't know. I just think logistically and maybe just like emotionally for the players, I wonder if that might be something that they might consider. I don't know. And, like, the World Juniors, I think itself, I've watched maybe two games, but I haven't followed it as much as I would like to. So I don't know. I just, one of the things I watched like kind of right after the Canada Latvia game, I was like, ah, this hurts. And you know, I messaged our friend group too. I was like, ah, that's not a nice feeling.
So I've got a question for you. Is it just this, as we get older, we just kind of spend less time watching World Juniors, or is it like because it's not in North America, so it's kind of not in prime time. It's just kind of like out of the way time for us in Canada. Like, is it just me? Does it feel like the press of the World Juniors has been not as strong as this year as other years?
I think the fact that it's overseas definitely makes it harder. I think when it's, you know, especially when it's in Canada, I feel like the coverage is a lot better. There's a lot more analysis and stuff. But I think because it's overseas this year, I don't find the hours to be too bad. But I think given the fact that, you know, you and me were both now working professionals, like 10 years ago, like we would be in school and we'd be on holiday break, right? So it's not like we would be doing anything. We could just watch World Juniors all day. But now that, you know, you have to work, you know, during the holidays, right? Like, you don't get 2 weeks off to watch the World Juniors. I think that's why, I don't know. I think that's why, like, we don't see it as much, because we're not focused on it as much, because we just don't have that much time, right? Like, next year when it's in Ottawa, I could guarantee you it's probably gonna be crazy because it's in Canada. But again, like, I think it's a time factor for probably like us, you know, like when we're, you know, no longer that age where we can just have it streaming or just be watching it and not care about other stuff in the world.
Yeah, because like this year it just feels like, I don't know, it just feels quieter. I think what it also is, second thing, is that you bring a good point. So the media hasn't been as strong as this. And is it possibly because Canada isn't a favorite like it is often? So it's like, eh.
I think that's like a big contributing factor too, that I kind of thought. Like, I think if you're looking at the two favorites, it's going to be Sweden and US, which it's kind of played out so far. And then Canada and Finland were kind of like distant, like bronze medal level teams, I think. I think the key this year too is that there's no superstars. Like, I mean, the US team is very, very strong. They've got really good players, but like there's no Bedard this year. There's no Bedard. Like last year there was no Bedard, right? I do think not having the Russians in World Juniors has also changed quite a bit. Like, if you're the U.S. and you look at your group right now, you're like, who am I worried about? But like, if you were like when Russia was in the World Juniors, right? You had the five traditional powerhouses. Like, you had Russia, Sweden, Finland, Canada, and the U.S. So you're bound to at least get some good games to watch during the group stages, at least. But now it's kind of like the one group stage game that you're really looking forward to watch is probably Sweden versus Finland. And even that game is probably not going to be as great anymore, because Finland's really dropped the ball this year, right? The first two games losing, starting off 0-2. I think there's the three contributing factors that we've talked about, right? Like, it being overseas, we're just busy in life, and the fact that there's not really like a superstar, especially not a Canadian superstar on this team, right? Like, we don't have any Connors on this team, right? So without a Connor, you know, we don't have a superstar.
Yeah, like, I mean, Macklin Celebrini's playing, right? He's a projected first overall pick, but I think it's really hard. Jeffrey, off the top of your head, who was the first overall pick after the year after Sidney Crosby?
Wasn't it Eric Johnson?
Was it 2004?
No, Crosby was 2005.
Sorry, 2006, my bad.
Yeah, wasn't Johnson 2006?
It is. But even then, I feel like that year didn't have a very strong... It wasn't as notable. Does that make sense?
Like, I would say Macklin Celebrini, he is, like, a very high likelihood being the first overall pick. But he's not a generational talent that we see in the Connor McBedard, the Connor McDavids, right? Like he is a very, very good player. Don't get me wrong. Like, he doesn't look out of place being an underager right now in the World Juniors, but he isn't taking over games. I'd say he's probably on the better side of projected first overall picks, but he isn't, like, you know, taking over. He's not first line right now. Like, he's not a 17-year-old top line or facing 19-year-olds. He's still, like, a 17-year-old who's playing maybe second line minutes still. Like, he needs some, like, protection as well. Like, I think he's going to be a good player, but at the same time, it's hard to say. Like, I would probably put him in the same, like, as, like, an Owen Power, right? Like, very, very strong player. It's going to be a good player in the NHL, you know, playing in the university, in the NCAA. But he's not going to be taking over the world once he's, you know, plays in the NHL type of thing. He's just going to be a very good player.
What I'm trying to say is, like, it's really hard to be the projected first overall pick after a player like him, like a generational player.
Yeah, I mean, like, there's so much less excitement because we don't have Bedard at the World Juniors this year, right? Like, we're kind of like, oh, you know, I think, especially if you look at this Team Canada team, I think all the analysts have said, like, it's going to be a by-committee team, which is very different from in the past, where it was always, like, you would have, like, two, three, like, amazing guys who were top three, top five picks in the last draft or something, and would be, like, carrying the team, or, like, you have a very strong team. But this is kind of more of a team that's a very, like, everyone is above average, but no one's that superstar, right? So that's why this team is so much different from, like, the Americans right now, or the Swedes, right? Like, they don't have that. They have game-changing talent, but they don't have that elite game-changing talent.
That's fair. Speaking of, I got a terrible transition for this one, but have you noticed Jack Campbell has lost a starting job in the AHL?
I kind of heard fleeting moments, or, like, fleeting talk about it. Like, I know I heard he was doing well, but then they were going to call him up, and then Picard started playing well, so then they're like, oh, we'll put him down in the minors for a little bit longer, and then he didn't do so well, and now they're like, well, now we can't call him up. Like, I didn't know he lost his starting job, though, in, like, Bakersfield.
Do you know how he's doing?
I'm going to guess his number. Are his numbers worse than his NHL numbers? That's the big question.
He is. Let me double check his NHL numbers this year. 1 second as we look at this. Jack Campbell.
Can I ask? I'm trying to think about who is currently in the Edmonton system, right? Like, you have Stuart Skinner and Calvin Picard probably out on the Oilers team. I'm trying to think who would have been, like, is Olivier Rodrigue still, okay, he's still with the, I got a thumbs up there from Olsen. Yeah, he's still, because I was trying to think, like, who could beat him out, and I'm like, I can't think of which AHL could be, but I think Olivier Rodrigue was, like, a third round pick by the Oilers a couple seasons ago.
So not as bad as his Edmonton Oilers games this year. So as an Oiler this year, he is 1-4-0 with an 873. As a Bakersfield Condor this year, he is 4-6-0 with an 888.
So those numbers mean that he is not going to get called up anytime soon, especially if Picard and Skinner continue to hold the net. I think Campbell can only come up if there's an injury to one of their goalies. But even then, I don't know if the Oilers are into LTIR space, but they might want to keep Campbell down so that they can accumulate cap space for the trade deadline.
Just for reference. So the player who he lost the starting role to, Olivier Rodrigue is 5-2-3 with a 32.
What's concerning to me now is the fact that he played well his first couple of games. I remember Jack Campbell, so he must have really, really like crapped the bed. And I think, like you said, like we're not even talking about GAA. Like I know you're big on save percentage, right? Because that's kind of more indicative of like what a goalie is. I mean, we could dive into the more high-end analytical stats, but like your save percentage is a very big indicator if you're a good goalie or not. And you know, playing behind the same defense, but you're getting different results is not good. And like, isn't Jack Campbell signed for like what, 3-4 more years? Like, this is not a good investment by Edmonton. And I think the questions are become like, how are you going to get out from underneath his cap? Like, how are you going to get out of his contract? Is it going to be a buyout? How much sweetener, if you have any sweeteners left? Like we mentioned a couple of episodes, maybe you trade Dreisaitl and then you get some of those assets back, and maybe you have to use one of those assets to get rid of the Campbell contract, right? Like, it's going to be interesting. I think, like, the best case scenario is always going to be Campbell getting back to his level when he was with the Leafs. But worst case scenarios, I think we're at worst case scenario situation right now. But I think your most likely option is that Campbell returns to be at least a 1B with Stuart Skinner. Am I correct about that?
At this point, like, do you even try? Because, like, at the end of the day, the issue is his confidence, right? It has to be his confidence. Goalies are living and dying by their confidence. And I feel like a player like Jack Campbell especially lives and dies with his confidence.
Yeah, like, if you remember, like, he was, I want to say he was 11th overall by the Stars, like, way back when. He never really developed into a goalie until, like an NHL goalie until he went into the Kings organization. Kind of got that luck of being a Kings backup to turn that into a starter's job. And then he kind of made it into an NHL goalie. But again, like, he was a late bloomer too as a goalie. Like, we know goalies are like bloomers traditionally, but he was like particularly, especially with someone with his pedigree, right? So I do think, like, I think it might be the point where, you know, you are done trying if you're the Oilers, right? Like, maybe it's time that he just needs a change of scenery. But what team is gonna let them off the hook of that Campbell contract is gonna be the question.
I don't think anyone, like, no one's actively taking like that anymore, and it's $5 million with 3 more years. Like, it's term and money for a guy who's not only not gonna play in the NHL, isn't really playing the AHL, and I don't know if I would want him to be my mentor for a young goalie right now either.
I think the one option that I think continues to be brought up is maybe I don't think it's that likely, but would the Ducks consider it? Because John Gibson is at 6.4 for this year and 3 more years. If you kind of line that up with the Oilers, right, who have Jack Campbell, and he's what, like, he's got this year plus 3 more years. So realistically, if you were to do a trade, that would mean Oilers are just picking up an extra 1.4 a year for maybe, if you think John Gibson is just, if you think John Gibson is a better option than Jack Campbell, and you are willing to pay the assets for it, I think that's the only option or the only team that you might be able to convince. I don't know if there's any other options.
Oilers have $65,000 in cap space.
Yeah, like, they're going to have to figure out a way to clear out cap space, right? Like, I think right now, if you're the Oilers, right, you're trying to, like, that's what I'm saying. Like, they're not into LTIR, so they can actually accumulate cap space. But, like, come the trade deadline, they're going to have slightly more money, maybe. They're just going to keep, I don't know, they're just going to keep trying to get more cap space until they can afford, and maybe have to clear up even more cap space.
At deadline, they're projected at $139,000 in cap space. I don't think it works out financially. You're going to have to get rid of someone else too as a cap dump. I don't see Anaheim wanting that either. And I just don't see the value. Like, you're not going to, who's going to be your starter then? You're not going to put him, You're not going to put a AHL backup as your NHL backup because his name is, you know, he's got a reputation. You know what I mean? It's just poor asset management. And then Alex Stalock is already the old man on the block on that team.
Yeah, I get what you mean, but I think like if you were to make a trade, it's gotta be it'll be Campbell and like Ryan McLeod, which I mean Ryan McLeod has a decent enough cap hit. I mean he's on the younger side. He's still like he's a useful NHLer, and I feel like the Ducks can at least see what they have in him. But that I think that opens up the cap space for Edmonton. It's just how many prospects, how many picks are going to have to go the other way to make up the mess that is Jack Campbell, as you know, basically him being a salary dump to fill in the fact that we're bringing in John Gibson.
Adding $2.1 million to the non-buried portion of Jack Campbell's contract adds up to about $5.95 million. The John Gibson salary is $6.4 million, so it still doesn't work.
Yeah, but I mean, if you're the Oilers, you can start accumulating cap space. Why the hell do you need to carry an Adam Ernie with you on your team right now? You don't need to carry 14 forwards. Like you can if you needed to financially wiggle yourself around, you can find a way. I think there is a way that if the Oilers really wanted John Gibson, there is a way to get that financial cap space opened up. It's just, in the end, no team is going to willingly help the Oilers get rid of that Campbell contract unless they are getting something back substantially, right?
It's just, I don't see if it's worth it for any team to help them with this, right? The Oilers don't have a strong prospect core because this is supposed to be they're all in, right? They have their first round picks, I guess, if you want to try that. But how many first round picks are you going to take for you to take on that contract?
Would you take on I'm just looking at teams that have like teams like Chicago and like San Jose who are like actively tanking, right? Like do we like again, those are two front offices that aren't going to help you out, right? So like I don't know. Again, Edmonton, I think they have to hope that things work out eventually for Jack Campbell. But like you said, I feel like the time has come and gone and that they need to move along, right? So he just needs to go, right? I mean, maybe the Sharks? Who knows? Well, speaking of the Sharks, actually, they've got 9 wins now. So they have surpassed the Washington Capitals and my prediction that they're only going to get 8 wins.
Yeah, from the start, it wasn't going to happen. It wasn't going to be 9 wins.
Yeah, but they are worse than the Colorado Avalanche of, was it 2016, 2017, where I think that was a comparison Anton made. Like, they're worse than that, right? Like, right now, I think if you look at, you know, like, their goal differential, they're losing by over 2 goals a game. Like, they've had a couple of nice comeback wins. They've got some grit. But it's also, I mean, you only have 9 wins going into New Year's. Like, maybe they make it. I don't know if they're playing tonight, but like, this is not a great look for the Sharks. And I don't know. I think in the salary cap era, they're probably the worst NHL team ever.
Like, you had me cheering for the freaking San Jose Sharks as a Kings fan to prove you wrong. You know how hard that was for me emotionally?
At least I didn't have you charmed to cheer for Vegas.
It's up there, man.
I think the one good thing with the Sharks, though, right now, is that they have been able to give opportunities to their young players. I think that's been key for them, right? Like, they've been able to give William Eklund, like, a substantial role in the offense. They've been able to try out, like, guys like Fabian Sederlund, Philip Sedina. Like, they've given their players an opportunity. It's just that they're still losing really badly. Their goaltending's still not great. Like, to me, I don't know what else this team is going to be able to do, like, to improvement. I think they just have to hope that they're going to have enough internal improvement while continuing to tank for, I don't know where the, where are they looking forward to? Like, what is their goal in terms of eventually going on the uphill and improving this team?
They're going to get there. Just give it time.
I guess so, but it doesn't look great. Like, okay, if you look at their plus minuses, William Eklund, minus 16, Thomas Hurdle, minus 18, Philip Zadina, minus 28. Philip Zadina is a minus 28 in 31 games. Like, that's a little bit ridiculous.
If you take away the garbage start they had, let's say you look at the last like 10 games, what would it look like? I think that's, you got to take away that garbage start first. So, okay, you and I have to admit, that was an anomaly of how bad a start that was, right?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, like, what, they lost like the first 10 games, almost like that, something like that. Like, it was bad. But they're only 2-7-1, and they've lost their last 7. So, I get the beginning was an anomaly, but I don't think it was that much of an outlier. It's not that far off from the trend.
Yes, but I don't think the plus minus was as bad.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have the stats with me right now, but I mean, you're not going to be, you know, stopping goals when your top defensive pairing is Mario Ferraro and Kyle Burrows. Like, I'm pretty sure Kyle Burrows was a seventh defenseman for the Canucks last year, or might have been playing the minors quite a bit last year. And it's kind of more of the, I'm pretty sure he was more of like a enforcer defenseman and not supposed to be playing top pairing, right? Like, to me, the Sharks, they're going to be bad. Are they going to hit 20 wins? Maybe let's set that benchmark. Do you think the Sharks are going to hit 20 wins by the end of the season?
20 wins. So it'd be a win percentage of what? 212? Is that what it is? About 212? 20 divided by 82, 243. And right now, what are they? What's their record right now?
They have 9 wins in 36 games.
9 wins in 36 games. So right now, they have about 25% chance. So they're going to get worse than they are right now, basically. No, I think they do better than that. I think they go 22 to 23 games.
I will remain pessimistic and hate on the Sharks even more. I'm surprised as a Kings fan that you are having so much hope for the San Jose Sharks. But like, I look at this team, like, I'm also like, who is going to be, like, obviously that's trade deadline. I think if you're Mike Greer, you're going to look to move pieces. But at the same time, like, I think your only piece that might be enticing would be maybe Michael Granlund, who's got surprisingly 23 points in 29 games. Like, he's got an extra year though at $5 million, so that could be a price that people don't want to pay. Like, I don't know, I feel like you're right, they can probably luck their way to more than 20 wins, but at the same time, I will remain the pessimist and say that they're probably not going to figure it out and go under 20 wins.
I don't get why they hate. Like, if I was a GM, I would be open to like Kalen Addison. Yeah, he's a minus 15, but he's got 11 points. Like, you know, on a terrible team. I mean, I would consider that. You know, I would also consider at the right price, an Anthony Duclair, good secondary scoring, Zetterlund, a young player on RFA deal. Someone offered me him, I'm taking him. Eklund's available, I take him.
Yeah, but those aren't guys that I don't think Eklund or Zetterlund are guys that Greer is putting on the market, right? Like, Eklund is like what, like a seventh overall pick from like a couple years ago. Like you're gonna be getting rid of like mainly veterans. I can see Duclair maybe as like a secondary scorer. I mean, the price is, it's just gonna depend on the price, but like, like, honestly, like, Duclair, Granlund, maybe a Ferraro. I mean, he's got cost certainty. He's locked up for a couple more years. But, I mean, I just look at this team, like, is Greer going to make enough changes at the trade deadline where he's going to be like, oh, I'm going to, you know, actually make moves, or should I keep this team together and just, you know, try to give them some continuity, make sure I have veterans and protect my young guys a little bit, right? Like, I don't know, even Hoffman at four, like, you're gonna have to retain quite a bit if in order to make some of these guys even a little bit, you know, interesting for in the marketplace. I will say Kalen Addison, after being like basically a waiver pickup, I don't think many teams are going to be looking for a power play specialist who needs to be protected, unless you're the Leafs like last year and picked up Eric Gustafson.
The Sharks can't retain. They use both the retention spots, one on Brent Burns, one on Eric Karlsson.
Don't you have three, or is that just buyouts?
Well, I'm pretty sure you have two. Let's double check.
I thought you had three, or I don't know if that's buyouts, or I can't remember.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Three, sorry, you're three. You're right. I thought it was two.
So if you're Mike Greer, I think your best chance would probably be a Duclair, or maybe a Hoffman if Hoffman gets on a heater or something, right? Like, Granlin, I feel like, isn't a great idea because he's got 2 years more, but he's probably your most attractive piece right now. Like, Mike Greer's got a lot of work to do, and he's got quite a few years to work on it. So,
You care if you're Mike Greer about whatever you get back? Are you taking on additional salary, like in terms of retained salary, for more than this year? If it means you can just get a better return, or do you just get whatever you can get? Because like LeBanc, Hoffman, Duclair, Kunin, Barabanov, those guys are all free agents this season. Kapokakinen, you know, they're all free agents. You just get whatever you can for them.
I don't think so. And we saw that with that Karlsson trade, right? He was only willing to retain up to a certain point. And if teams didn't meet his price, he didn't, you know, even try to bargain, right? Like, until the Dubas came with him with an offer, and that they were able to settle on, you know, the Sharks only retaining 1.5. I think Mike Greer is going to be like, yes, everyone is available except for, you know, the young guys like Eklund and Zetterlund, and I think those are probably the only two. But they're going to set a price on every player. There's going to be a bar that they'll never go under. And if teams try to lowball them underneath that bar, you're not going to say it. Like, I don't think they're just going to do a fire sale. I think they're going to – Mike Greer, I think, is particular in what he wants back. And if he's not going to get what he wants back, he's fine to just let these guys go to the market in the offseason.
That's fair.
All right. I think that pretty much wraps up our episode. This is something that kind of came up when we were talking about the sportsmanship thing. I don't know if you've seen this news article, but did you know that in Newfoundland that they no longer do handshakes after games now?
Yes, and I think it's so dumb.
Like, you played hockey growing up. You did handshakes after every game.
There's nothing else. If players are having incidents after they're punching each other or whatever the heck it is, I don't care. You suspend them. Problem solved.
And
you suspend them until everyone learns you just don't punch each other like that.
Well, the thing too, it wasn't a player that led to most of this. It was like coaches. Like, if adults can't be responsible for the kids that they're coaching, maybe the adults need more training, or maybe the adults shouldn't be coaching. But like, I don't understand. Like we said, like, even after a tough loss, you're going to shake the hands of your opponent, right? Like, game's over, you respect your opponents. Now you're just losing that important part of sports in general, right? Like, every sport, even in, like, you know, adult leagues. Like, when I play in soccer, you know, after every game, you line up and shake the other team's hand. Even if, you know, you got tackled really hard, you got injured or something, you still shake that guy's hand, right? Or the girl's hand, right? Like, I feel like by, you know, preventing this thing, I think players aren't going to understand that sportsmanship factor, right? Like, not understanding that, you know, once the game's over, you know, the game's over. Now it's about sportsmanship. So I don't know. This irked me quite a bit. And I don't know, it kind of came up when we were talking about the whole sportsmanship thing with the player of the games and stuff.
If you're a trashy coach and you tell your players to fight, or you fight yourself with players or other coaches, then you're suspended. This is, there is no if ands or buts. I don't care if the ref screwed your team over. I don't care. Especially when you're at a kid's level. Like, I'm sorry, but, like, pick an average team out there, none of them are making the NHL. Take your average team, not a single one of those players are making the NHL. The whole point of this sports is to learn how to be a good person. That's one of the things, right? Like, one of the things you do sports is you learn how to be a good person. And being a good person sometimes involves you just swallowing the bad results. I don't care if the refs screwed you over. You're an adult. Be the freaking adult.
And just like you said about the kids not making the NHL, you coaching your kids' team is not going to make you an NHL coach either. There's a very, very low chance that you're going to be an NHL coach just because you're coaching your kids' team. So, you know, grow up and, you know, if you like, and it's not even being suspended. If you're the coach, you're getting arrested for like assault, right? Like this isn't like a, oh, the hockey division would just be, you know, like, oh, I'm going to suspend you and your team. No, like you're going to get charged for assaulting someone. Like I feel like Newfoundland and whoever, Hockey Newfoundland or whatever you want to call them, I think they missed the mark here. It's not about, this prevents the situation, but no one learns from the situation in the end, right? Like you've just stopped it, but you haven't stopped the problem, right? Like you've just prevented it from potentially happening. Like I could still imagine, you know, players going to find the refs after the game, right? Like they could still, you know, in the parking lot. I don't know what happens, but like, it's not going to work. And I feel like there's going to be enough commentary from it. And I think like we've seen it in articles already, like people responding back, like say like, hey, like it's happened, but like there is a reason it's not as common as I think people, or as Newfoundland has made it people think.
Stop catering to idiots. That's my final thought. Jeffrey, what's your final thought?
Honestly, I'm going to say it. The Sharks, under 20 wins by the end of the season, and the Coco Cup is going to only last less than 5 years. That's my final thought.
And with that, we'll talk to you in a few weeks.
Thanks for listening to the Bag of Pucks podcast, part of the National Podcast Network. You want to complain about us? You can tweet us at BOP_POD on Twitter. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you soon.